Sitting across from me are the gurus of how to, Alvin and Lawrence U. Bell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York. And they visit us once a month to talk about home repair and related matters. And we take a lot of your calls, right, at 212-433-9692. Or you can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And if neither of those are satisfactory, you can always Twitter Larry, who's looking for friends.
I am.
Do they call him friends on Twitter?
I think they call him followers.
Followers.
I like that a lot better. It builds my ego up more.
It's like a tail?
Something like that. When I was here last time, I was up to 17.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm up to 31. So we are... Mm. We are a powerful force being not
that means 31 people want to know what you're thinking at any given moment.
At any given moment, they need to know.
Well, I hope you'll spill the beans for this larger audience today.
Yes. Well,
and you know, it's impossible not to think about air conditioning guys.
The heat and the heat and the more heat.
Well, you just came at a time when we are being hit by one of the worst. We've had this kind of thing before. After all, summers, August usually could be pretty awful in New York.
Well, we don't know what happened here in New York like a million years ago or say...
Well, I remember bad summers when I was a kid.
It was probably hotter than it was today or yesterday.
The traffic was still bad back then, trust me.
But we've been hitting over 100 on a regular basis. Yes. When I was a kid, that used to mean at least... a photograph on the front page of the Mirror of the News of an egg frying on the sidewalk. Yeah, they don't do that anymore.
And also somebody like myself sleeping on the fire escape and in the middle of the night and holding on for dear life. I don't know how I slept out there, but I did.
Well, it's become...
some traditions die with good reason.
Yes. But I think that people really do have to do a lot of the things that are necessary to just reduce the heat load on themselves. And that could be done with using a lot less electricity than people are thinking of using. You hear constantly on the news, use less air conditioning. Try to get, if you're going to use it, maybe just use it to get the humidity down in your apartment, then shut it off for a while. And just if you can also, there's ways of bringing air through an apartment or a building by using wet cloths over windows and letting them evaporate, and that'll cause a current. Not always the most popular thing, but it will work.
And you've been recommending dehumidifiers.
Oh, dehumidifiers work great.
Do they work like air conditioners? You have to close all of the windows and doors?
The concept is a little bit different. What happens is a dehumidifier actually makes your own air conditioning system, your own body air conditioning system, work better. Because as you lower the relative humidity in a space, the perspiration on your body, which comes out naturally in order to cool your body off, evaporates more rapidly, and that transition actually cools down your body. The faster you can get the perspiration to evaporate, the cooler you will feel naturally. So therefore, dehumidifiers are very good. In fact, if you get an air conditioning unit, that if it works very well, it should be doing two things. It should be dehumidifying the atmosphere, and it also should be cooling whatever air and moisture happens to be in that space. But having an air conditioning unit oversized will chill the water, but not reduce the relative humidity. And what you'll have is you'll be like in a swamp, a cold swamp, rather than being comfortable. So those are the things you have to understand what's going on.
But the thing about dehumidifiers are they tend to put warm air back into the air.
That's true,
why
too.
They're used for generally cellars and basements, which are generally tend to be cooler anyway, but that's where you're trying to get the moisture out of. With what we're saying about having an oversized air conditioner, what happens is it tends to cycle on and off a lot, and therefore it never really gets the dehumidification quality out of the air, which would actually make you feel cooler than just having a large unit just chill the air and make it like a wet ice box.
What about just aiming two fans at yourself?
That works too.
Fans does another thing. What it does is when the air blows over your body, it also accelerates the evaporational rate of the moisture that's on your body.
So we're back to that again.
Pardon me?
Getting rid of – evaporating the perspiration.
Right. And the faster you could it's a phenomenon in nature. There are three stages of matter: solid, liquid, and a gas. And each one requires heat energy or the lack of heat energy in order to have those differentials. So what happens is when you blow air over something, like if you wet your hand or you're coming out of a shower and all of a sudden the window is open, you feel chilly. Why? Because the moisture on your body from the shower is evaporating very rapidly, and therefore you feel cool.
I'm ready to do that.
No, right now, absolutely.
But I also have to say that blowing hot air on you is not necessarily going to make you feel that much better, because I know that when I used to ride a motorcycle on a day like today, you would still be hot and you're moving 50 miles an hour.
That's a different phenomenon.
This studio isn't too uncomfortable because there's an awful lot of hot air that gets blown during
a regular broadcast. And we're part of it.
Broadcast.
We're part of that.
I'm Leonard Lopate with the Gurus of How To, Alan Larry U. Bell. And in just a few moments, we'll be taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And when you come here, we always have a little word quiz. Can I read it this time?
Sure. Hey, wait, let's have a vote.
Okay, yeah, I vote me.
Yeah. And our votes don't count.
I can turn up your microphones if I want to.
I know, we're Washington, D.C. We don't get to vote.
The quiz is, what is the name given to a type of screw that could have opposite thread pitches, different thread sizes, or clockwise and or counterclockwise threads on opposite ends of the same screw shank? If that doesn't confuse you, nothing will. Anyway, this is a screw that doesn't just go in one way, basically, right?
Well, it could have multiple threads on it, and it could have multiple size threads going in completely different directions and everything else. And that type of a screw is a very important thing. Actually, it's part of the—
What would you use it for?
You could use a stair rail bolt, which a lot of people know what a stair rail bolt
is. No, I don't think anyone really does know what a stair rail bolt is.
It has a wood thread on one side and it has a machine thread on the other, so that you can screw it into a wood post and then put a nut and a bolt onto that same device in order to hold it together. That's called a stair rail bolt. But it also has the same name of what we are looking for here today.
Okay. So don't call it and say stair rail bolt.
It comes from the Archimedean principles. Go ahead.
Like what doesn't?
That Archimedes, he was just so far ahead of his time.
Yes, he was.
Should we take some calls?
Sure.
Well, first of all, let me read this. Andrew from the Bronx wrote in. He's changing a tile floor for a wood floor and needs to make a straight line in the tile and doesn't know how to do it when the tile meets the wall. Any tips?
Repeat that very
soon. I guess he's putting tile over a wood floor and he wants to put a straight line in the tile. Doesn't know how to do it when the tile meets the wall.
That's called coping. Coping it into the wall. What you really have to do is you take the tile when it comes to the wall and you put the tile down on the floor, and then you take another tile and put it to the wall, and that design or shape or angle that it comes to the wall is where you scratch it, and then you cut it off in that place, and that tile which you just cut now fits right into the place where you just made the angle cut.
Okay.
Works very nice. It's floor layers know how to do that almost automatically.
But I also have to think, if you need more of a visual, I'm sure the tile manufacturer that you bought it from probably has some installation instructions online, so I would definitely try. Or other tile manufacturers would have, because what you just described, if you're not visually thinking about what it could
be. A lot of home repair books have that in.
Yes.
And in fact, Home Depot, if you go over to Home Depot or any of the other
Lowe's
they will have actual instructions on how to do that trick.
And I bet you can find this online as well.
I'm sure they could.
Yes.
Joanne from Queens, hi, you're on the air.
Hey,
hi, Joanne.
Hi. I'm so glad to speak to you guys. I've been waiting for you so I could ask you this question.
Go ahead.
I had my kitchen redone about 5 years ago. And my friend, who was our interior designer, said, buy the cabinets at one of the big stores because they'll stand behind their work.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually insisted that we use a small person in Brooklyn, and we had the cabinets, and I wanted white cabinets. And he said to me, you're going to have problems with the white, but I wanted white cabinets. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got the white cabinets, and 2 or 3 months later, I called him back, and he took the doors back, and he resprayed them for me,
mm-hmm.
but it just happened again. And now it's all the cabinets are, you know, the tops where the front of the cabinet meets the top of the drawer.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the paint is off, and I don't know what to do or what kind of paint to use or where to go.
Well, first of all, the kind of paint that they use in cabinetry is a lacquer type, is a lacquer finish, and it's very brittle, and that's why the cabinet maker said he would try to discourage you from using this white kind of a lacquer thinner, because it is very hard and it's brittle. If you touch it with a, as you open up the drawer, close the drawer, and it bangs against the outside wall,
it's like
or you're putting
glass.
In a spoon or something like that, and it strikes it on the edge, you will cause chipping of that kind of finish. In other words, the most durable finishes actually are the oil-based finishes or the finishes that are natural finishes or something that has a white pigment. There is white stain that looks almost white, but it's not actually what they call a coating.
But
and that's the problem.
But if she wants to paint it white, is there another paint option that she or a finishing option?
All kinds of paint. If she uses the a latex paint or something like that, because this is lacquer or it's a sort of acrylic kind of paint, that's very brittle. But the
Can't she put something like an underpaint down and then put something on top of it?
It'll chip anyway. Mm. It's a very difficult.
And
it's
also
very difficult.
The answer is it's going to chip if you want an enamel finish.
That's right.
A lacquered finish.
It's going to look distressed earlier than necessary because of that.
Yes, and also the white, by the way, after a while does change color.
Sorry about that, Joanne.
So that's it. I have shabby chic, I guess.
Yeah, go with that. That's what. Go with the shabby chic thingy.
Or else just keep on patching it, right?
Well, actually, the best way to patch that up, which I used to do as a cabinet, I was a cabinet maker, and we always have that problem. The best kind of touch-up paint that you can do is go into an automobile supply store where they have touch-up paint and get the color that matches your cabinet, and you can touch it up. That is an actual lacquer kind of applicator and everything else, and that works very well.
Okay, so automobile supply store.
Mm-hmm. An automobile supply store, right.
And then I'll paint it myself. I don't have to get it sprayed?
No. You just go over wherever the chip is. You just take this little, like, almost like a nail polish brush that comes with it, and just go over that little chip and leave it alone.
Well, actually, now, with 5 years' time passing, the doors could be painted.
Well, then if the doors have to be repainted, they have to be resanded and scrubbed down because the kitchen has an oil in the atmosphere from the cooking and everything else. So they have to be washed very thoroughly and then sandpapered and then repainted.
And where would I take that? I don't want to go back to the same guy because I'll get the same
problem. Well, there are companies that do refinishing of kitchen cabinets.
Or maybe she can go to some automobile painting place.
That don't go there.
Right? As long as she doesn't get a fender bender, she's okay.
Yeah.
If you got a friend that wants to do it, it's okay.
But lots of luck with that.
David from Montclair, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Does it make sense to maintain a constant temperature in the house with the air conditioner, or should I keep it off and then just crank it up at the last minute when I need it?
Because the mayor just went on the air yesterday and said, please turn off your air conditioners when you're not in the house.
I have to tell you, I think that you should keep it off when you're not there, and I do that with mine. And because the reality is that even like last night, my air conditioning unit was on all night. It hardly turned off. And so it tells me that, especially with this kind of heat, it's not going to be a lot of cycling on or off because most of these air conditioning units are at their design temperature. We design in New York for about 100 degrees maximum temperature, ambient exterior air temperature. So mine's going to be on all the time. So I have it off. I know I keep talking about the remote access that I have to my heating system, but it allows me to turn it on just before. So when it's off, I'm not using any electricity, and I'm not spending money.
People don't want to walk into a hot room, and that's part of the problem. What about, since you also recommend using a smaller air conditioner and running it on high rather than using a big one and running it letting it cycle on and off.
Well, actually, that's not really.
Can you just run the smaller one on low when you're not there?
Well, let's get back to a few things that's taking place in a building when you're cooling or heating it.
But first of all, I want to say something first.
I'll give you. You
first
have the floor.
We don't say put in really a smaller unit. Put one in that's just size for it. And if you have an option, if your room either it's a bigger one or a small one, then you take the slightly smaller one instead of the slightly bigger
That's
one.
True.
That's right. But you do have to size all equipment for the space that it's in. That's now, you were going to say.
The thing is, you have to really comprehend that if you turn off an air conditioning unit or a heating unit, what happens is you're not only heating the air in which you are breathing and walking around it, but you're also heating the furniture and the physical building. And therefore, if you go and you turn off your equipment really completely off and you leave for, say, several hours, it's going to take a long time to heat up, cool down that building, because not only do you have to cool up the air, but you have to cool up your couch, the furniture.
So my suggestion of running it on low might be a good idea. You're just maintaining some kind of a cool temperature, but not the complete coldness.
Right. That is a better way, is bring your temperature to raise it. In other words, everybody would like the temperature to be around 74, 75 degrees. It's really comfortable at that level. But what you can do is bring it up to 80 if you're not in the house. And the 80, then what happens when you come back to the house and you bring it down to, say, 74, 75, it'll be not easier, but it'll take less time to make you feel comfortable.
But I do contend, I disagree with that concept. I do contend that if you're out of the house for 5 hours, let's say, and it takes about 2 hours to heat, cool down your room again, I would rather see you put a timer in or some kind of remote access where 2 hours before it would turn on, and for 3 hours, it's not on at all.
That's a good
idea.
And
that way, especially during the day, you're helping the grid, you're saving electricity.
Can you get a timer, David?
Yes, I could.
Why don't you do that?
Yeah, they do make timers the same. You just have to make sure that it's the right wattage for your equipment, and you can turn on. Then once you're home, you take it off the timer, and you just go to manual.
Yes.
And then you set it up again the next day before you go.
Yes, but it works very well if you can control your timer when you're coming home. But all of a sudden, something comes up on the day, and it doesn't. It's off.
That's true, too.
We're going to take a little break and come back with more of your calls and your comments to the Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell. And remember that we have this quiz going. What's the name given to a type of screw that could have opposite thread pitches, different thread sizes, or clockwise and or counterclockwise threads on opposite ends of the same screw shank? And we have some people who have called in. We'll address them when we come back.
Oh, how good.
And then we'll take some more calls.
Yes.
Okay?
We have bets on this.
Sounds like fun. We're back with the Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Should we go to some of the people who have ideas of have an answer for the quiz?
No, I wouldn't go to them now.
No.
I'm going to do it.
Okay.
Gary from New Jersey, what do you think it is?
Yep, hanger bolt.
No.
Well, I'll tell you something. They are hanger bolts, which could be classified as this type of a screw that we're looking for.
But actually, what we have to explain here, which everyone's clear about, is that
that's like somebody saying hanger steak and you're looking for T-bone steak.
No,
that's the same.
These are all of these things, whether it's a stair bolt or a hanger bolt or even a turnbuckle or anything like that. This is part of all those things.
That's right.
That's what is important. This is
a larger concept.
This is a larger concept of what it is.
Okay. Thank you for your call. And Harvey from Yorktown Heights, New York, what do you think it is?
I think it's a posi lock.
Posi lock?
I got to look that up.
I know what a posi lock is, and this ain't it. Okay.
But thank you. Thank you for your call. Danielle on the Upper West Side says, please solve a disagreement between my husband and I. He says it is normal for, or between my husband and me, he says it's normal for window air conditioners to drip. I say they are not installed correctly if they're dripping, which some in our apartment building do a lot. Otherwise, there would be wet sidewalks all over the city.
Well actually, if the air conditioning is clean and it's new and all the orifices are really open, it should not drip, because if it's designed properly, the condensate is used in order to cool off the condenser. at the same time, and the water actually evaporates if it's on an equal footing. That's on the window air conditioning. However, unfortunately, it is very difficult to get that equilibrium that is appropriate, and so pitching the air conditioning unit outside the building is better than having the dripping onto your floor on the inside of the building.
But also, it also has to do with what the relative humidity is outside. The relative humidity gets much higher.
That is
more water is coming out of the unit, so it cannot just use that amount of water.
That's true, too.
So that has a lot to do with it also. So I would say you're both right. So
Tyler,
have a happy marriage.
Tyler left a comment. He says, my AC unit puts out air that smells a little bit mildewy.
Yes.
How can I safely clean it?
Yours actually may not be pitched properly and the water is sitting there stagnant, but you can also put in either a capful of bleach at the bottom, because what generally happens is over the winter, if it just sits there, the water just sits there and grows, because most of what is in that condensation is actually the dust from the air, which is made up of human skin, human hair, and other things that are in the air, and they are really good growers of mold. So that's what's going on.
Barry from Scarsdale, you're on the air.
Hi, Barry.
Hi. I think there's probably some pithy comment about politicians in your two-ended screw, but I'm not going to go there.
I think you made your point.
What I'd really like to ask about on the topic of humidity,
yes,
is I find during the summer that my side-by-side refrigerator, the freezer in particular, gets an awful lot of condensation and therefore ice in it, which mm-hmm. causes ice dams in the ice cube dispenser and lovely effects like that. So I'm wondering if there's something I can do to reduce
yes.
the humidity, specifically in the kitchen.
And, well, let me ask you a question.
And to make it harder, the seal on the door is very good.
Okay. The seal is good. How old is a unit, is it?
8 or 9 years.
8 or 9 years. Have you tried cleaning the seal?
With what?
You know, just soap and water.
Just soap and water is all you
need. Just get off whatever grease is there, because you could. The reason you get more moisture in there is either from opening and closing the door a lot, or some air is leaking in.
Or the food that you put into it is not packaged properly.
Yeah, and it has a lot of moisture.
And that's evaporating from the
food
that you put into it.
And also depends on the amount of ice you make, because that also evaporates out. So a lot of determining factors. And also, let me ask you what.
The automatic ice maker, you know, keeps making ice as long as the tray isn't full, and that does seem much wetter in the summer.
Mm.
Well, the thing is,
what temperature do you have the ice compartment set to?
It's all one compartment in the freezer.
But I mean, But you still have settings for the freezer and the refrigerator section, don't you?
Yes.
Well,
Maybe he doesn't have it on high enough.
I would say that probably the ice area needs to be set on a little bit higher to stop the...
Or actually lower temperature.
You think lower?
Lower temperature. In other words, it should be 0 degrees in the freezing compartment, exactly 0 degrees. And in the food compartment, it should be about 40 degrees. And that should be that differential. In fact, if you go online to our website, there is a thing on how to take care of your refrigerator and what the temperatures are for freezing compartments and everything else. So go online at accuratebuilding.com and you'll get all that information.
What I would also recommend is try and clean off the gasket. I think that's also
good. That's true.
Because stuff does get caught there.
Thanks for your call. Liz in the East Village writes,
hello, Liz.
I just moved into a new apartment and want to put up wall-mounted shelves for my laptop, computer, printer, winter clothes, etc. How do I know if my walls have studs to which I need to attach the shelves? Can I just anchor some screws in the wall to hold the shelves?
What she needs to do is, first of all, you have to see what kind of wall it is, but they do make a device called the Stud Finder, and they're pretty effective, actually.
Can I laugh?
Yes. and it's very effective.
I thought that was computer dating.
Yes, it is. That too. We are just all over the place today, aren't we? Anyway, so to find the wood posts that are inside the wall that makes up the wall framing, you find this thing called a post wall finder thingy.
Yes.
Anyway, but the stud finder will help you find that. And then you measure out usually 16 inches in either direction, make sure that the new stud is there, and mount your shelves across the studs. And that would work great.
Okay, thank you so much for your call.
Do not hang them from just the drywall or
no,
the plaster.
No, not on drywall.
Especially if you're going to put something very heavy on these shelves.
Okay, next we go to David from New York. Hi, David, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. Thanks for your time.
Yes, what's up?
We have three pieces of hardwood floor that need to be replaced in our home. It's a laminate floor, and it was put in about 3 years ago. Our contractor came over, took a fourth piece of the floor as a sample, took it to a few hardwood floor companies and stores that sell hardwood floor, trying to find out if he can get a replacement. And both hardwood stores told him that they can't match the wood. I need to get the original contractor who installed the hardwood floor. But that guy is just, he's disappeared. Mm-hmm. I can't get a hold of him. So we're told that unless I can figure out the exact lot of wood, that the coloring, the thickness of the wood, my wife and I are sort of screwed. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts or any advice.
Well, I'll tell you, what you can do is if you can probably get some stain, and I don't know what kind of finish you have on it, but most of the time it is a lacquer finish or a polyurethane finish. And what you can do is if you could just match it up with the kind of wood it happens to be, whether it be maple or oak or whatever it is, and just patch it in with that material, then sandpaper it all the way down and find the stain that matches your floor, stain it over, and then put some polyurethane over the whole thing or whatever varnish or whatever material you think it is, and that should work very well. That's what I used to do as a cabinet maker. Sometimes you just can't find the original manufacturer because it was made in lots, and once the lot is completed, then they start a new lot, and it's a different color.
When you go to the paint store and you see all those different stains, how much can you rely on the color that you actually see on that?
You actually can't. What you have to do is almost take that stain and stain a piece of wood and let it set aside. And then if it is too light, you have to get a darker stain. If it's too dark,
you can wind up buying a lot of stains.
If it's too dark, it's better, because then you could always add some mineral spirits to it to lighten it up.
But I also wanted to say that there's two other things I'm thinking of. Well, first of all, when you go to the hardware store or home center, a lot of times the stain is also given samples, also depending on what kind of wood you're applying
it
to.
That's true, too.
And the second thing is that as far as trying to search down this piece of wood, I would actually take the original. You still have a copy of the piece of wood you have, right?
Well, we have the rest of the floor.
Yeah, but I mean you have
the appropriate wood.
But you have one piece, and so you could go to – there are a lot of different flooring places in the city where you can actually just take it, and it's just going to be time-consuming until you find the pieces that you want.
That's true.
And if he gets close enough, nobody's going to notice
you
anyway.
It's going to be very difficult to match it perfectly.
Don't want to have blonde next to dark.
You want something – you could have two trees in the forest, and they're the same species and everything else – and one will take stain a different way that the next one will. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Bill from Long Island.
Hello,
Bill.
You think
you have the answer to our quiz?
Yeah, hi. I think, is it called a gimlet rod?
No, but you're really close. That's a rod that is in a machine that turns gear systems that have different threads on them. That's true. It's pretty close, but not what we're looking for.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Rachel in Sunset Park says, we have a skylight over the stairway in our brownstone. My husband found vents in the skylight. During the winter, he put insulation to close up the openings. Was this okay to do? And if not, why not?
No, I don't agree with doing that, because what it does is it actually causes – your building needs a place to vent out the moisture, and those skylights with the vents on top is the way the moisture gets out. Yes, there is somewhat of a heat loss, but you cannot keep a building so tightly sealed that you start growing things on the inside. And I've seen buildings where they've done that, and you actually have water dripping off the skylight. Now, everyone thinks the skylight is leaking, But in fact, it's not. Well, it's actually the water dripping off because it's condensing on that level.
Yeah,
and then
especially
dripping,
in the wintertime.
Especially in the wintertime.
Yeah,
but in the summertime, it also is a heat reliever that it gets a lot of the heat out and, again, moisture out of the building.
Is it good to have a little bit of a draftiness? Older buildings tend to be draftier.
Well, you can't stop the older buildings.
Well, let me tell you a little historical thing that we've come across is that before they used to have thermal windows, the double glazed windows, and weather stripping and all kinds of things. The houses were actually drier, and there was no such thing as mildew growing inside of the whole house. Never. But since they've been sealing up all these buildings like they are a thermos bottle, what happened is the moisture can't get out, and you're actually creating a culture in the building.
And the place where this happens is usually at the dew point front, which is why a lot of these buildings have these mold problems around the perimeter and wood's rotting out and everything, because the moisture hits this plane, stops there, and condensates there, and then starts causing problems.
Yes.
Mike in Queens writes, I live in a three-story carriage house. First floor is a garage with a drywall ceiling. Second floor and basement have exposed rafters. Do I need to drywall these to get my certificate of occupancy?
I don't know. I mean, in the cellar area, there are portions of the cellar that may require to be drywalled, but on the upper floor, there may not be, unless there's a fire coating issue that they want to deal with.
Yeah, in other words, in the basement next to the boiler room area, or even in the whole basement, the studs or the joists or every wood framing has to be sealed away. And they have to use what they call fire coat sheetrock.
Typex.
Which is 5/8 of an inch thick. And that is to prevent any small fire that does get in the basement or cellar area to not be go through the building through it's called fire stopping. And that's what the purpose of it is.
We have very little time, but I want to sneak Paul in. Can you make it very quick, Paul?
Sure. Hi, I have an old air conditioner, but it hasn't been used too much.
Mm-hmm.
And the AC plug at the outlet, the plug head is, you know, very warm and the wire attached.
Yes.
When plugs get hot, what is
it? What it means is that there's a loose wire in there. The wire is frayed inside the plug, and what he needs to do is buy a new plug of whatever, probably a 15 or 20 amp plug, and replace it.
And then we did not get an answer
and
correct.
And make sure
the
polarization is correct.
Yes.
We didn't get a correct answer to the quiz, but you'll be back next month. So maybe we can do this again.
What will we be doing
in the interim, Alvin?
We're going to do next time we're here, we're going to show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.